Hello and welcome to The Shape of Work, a podcast series by SpringWorks. My name is Anoop and I am your host. Each week, we'll be talking to top people managers across the world on the future of work and how it's shaping our workplace. So sit back and get ready to find out more from these movers and shakers as we have a no-holds-barred, anything-goes conversation with them about their journey, their insights, their thoughts, and most importantly, their ideas and vision for the workplace of the future. Join in on the conversation, leave a comment, and don't forget to hit that subscribe button.
Welcome to the Shape of Work podcast. On the episode today, our guest is Amandeep Mitta, who is the principal IT consultant at BEC Denmark. Amandeep, how are you doing today?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. All good here, at least for now. Amandeep, before we get started with the conversation, and we have a very interesting discussion up for today, and at least a topic which is very, very hot currently. But before we do that, let's set some context for the listeners. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey?
All right. Well, I come principally from tech background. I have been a developer, project lead, development manager, integration expert. And my stint with BEC began two and a half years ago with the function called Tech Academy, which is about upskilling the developers, upskilling the workforce to a newer technology stack, grooming them to adopt to the tools. So it's a bit of a technology migration and change management at the same time. Plus, Corona happened during the same time. So you can see the expansion of that scope. And so my function basically has been facilitating technology changes, technology knowledge sharings, and creating a workforce which is ready for the future.
Wow. That's, I mean, you've nailed the, at least the podcast, this Shape of Work podcast, the thesis for the podcast was exactly those things. So I don't think we have had a guest who's nailed the brief for the podcast as well as you have. But, you know, developers, you know, definitely something that at least I know for a fact that, you know, even the world is talking about them because of the gap, like you said, skill gap, and of course, the supply demand mismatch. And especially in India, a lot of news around, you know, developer salaries getting pumped up. It's a great time to be a developer in India, if you're a good developer, that is. And that's where upskilling comes into the picture, right? And the fact of the matter is, and, you know, you can definitely bring in the perspective from your experience in Denmark and such, but in India, definitely a huge gap in terms of the skills, right? And there are very, very few players who have been able to maybe move the needle by 0.1, 0.2%. I know of these, you know, coding boot camps and such who are able to take these developers from where they are to getting them up to speed where they can work with a high growth startup, for example. And those are the most sought after jobs by developers, by the way, at this point. But what are your thoughts on the gap? How do you see it as of 2021?
Well, there are different perspectives here, the different undercurrents which are in play here. Let's take the most common one first, and let's go to the tough ones later.
Sure.
Most common is like, so we are in the middle of Corona, or like we are in the last leg of Corona, whichever statement is good when this podcast comes out. So there's emphasis on remote working, emphasis on collaboration, emphasis on these tools like Zoom and other platforms rising, and how to work in that mode. So if you are a developer who needs to be onboarded to Skype or Microsoft Teams or other collaboration platforms, that's where it kind of begins. And then how to productively, how to efficiently use these channels to collaborate. And should there be remote workforce, how to collaborate in a remote workforce, culture differences, synergies, all that. So that's like, I will say the easiest one. Second is, which is also connected here, is like, we use this big elephant in the room term called digital transformation, right? Yeah. So many people have different meanings about it. But let's not get into that. But in essence, this is something like an organization has certain functions or certain deliverables which they are trying to improvise when deploying a newer set of technology or automating certain flows or basically a business optimization cycle using technology at the forefront. So that's what like deciphering the business digital transformation comes to. So that would also bring a lot of tools, technologies, ways of working, which and in Corona time, what we have seen is companies have spent like they have created the budgets for especially a transformation on this side. And then comes, most important thing which came out was like you can change the technologies. Yeah, you can bring in the new ones and new technology partners or vendors, but you have the same people. Yeah, sure, you can kind of get rid of some people based on different countries' employment situations and hire fresh ones. But the fresh ones also, it's not like picking somebody from the what do you say in India also anywhere, like picking somebody from the anywhere where the labor pool is available and come and start working here. It's not like chopping the wood kind of a job, right?
Correct.
So the people have to be trained. So what we are mostly left with is like, yeah, sure, we have this workforce who knows this business function well, who have been working on this. So why not actually rather invest in upskilling them?
Mm.
Yeah. So what does those upskilling challenges are? Are they just related to technology or processes? Or we as an organization haven't communicated why we need this technology change and what benefit it brings. Now stepping out a little bit from this, so why we need that technology change? It could be due to competitive landscape, could be due to something is totally unworkable and super expensive to maintain. So once you have those kind of a convincing communication, why we are doing this, what we are doing this, effectively communicated, then all the change management and the HR ops becomes relatively easy. Also related to when it comes to communication about like, so what is the kind of a role, what is the kind of a skill profile you want to create in? And this person, out of this person currently. So what should be done next? So, okay, sure, there's an aspirational like element involved, okay, and there's an individual ambition element involved. So keeping that mix in mind, there's something called like, as you say, like you created that rule-based learning path. It's not a kind of a certification or a stamping, though some companies do that, like for their own employees, and people are happy to share those badges. But let's keep it simplistic. It's like you have a role-based learning path. So you need to know this technology, basics, this technology applied in practice, and this technology probably once you actually start get to work on. There's another interesting thing going on is how we generally kind of measure on this technical training effectiveness. You might have found it funny, and I think it holds at many places still the same. One of the things we find is like how many seats we filled in that training, how much of that training was actually popular, and how many people signed up for that. You know, like, so we filled these many seats, so this training must be good. Sure. And then whatever you learned or whatever you are told in that training, was it useful? Useful in a way that like, yes, you heard it, maybe you practice it, but can you actually start applying in your work? Are your work assignments in alignment of what you just learned? Otherwise, it will just wash off sooner or later.
So it's
a mix of you have those, your target audience, people focus, settled in, defined, and at the same time, you have to also see what tasks they are actually going to be responsible with. It's not something which can be just told.
Yeah.
So I think that's a pretty long answer to the small conversation which you began. Yeah,
let's go definitely. It sets the context for the conversation, right? So, Amandeep, I have one question after listening to that answer is, you know, who sets these learning outcomes? Is it being driven from the top? Of course, everything is being driven from the top, but I wanted to understand, like, which function is defining the learning outcomes? Basically, the 5W1H of it. What, why, when, and how do you sort of ensure that there is a feedback loop in place? You get feedback from the teams where these upskilled candidates are going, and whether the learning outcomes are leading to better business outcomes, right?
Yeah. So, great that you brought it. Yes. As I said, like the first communication is like, why? So why are we doing this?
Correct.
Because if I'm not touching on the business confidential part, but it's like,
sure.
Like, we need this technology change because of certain reasons.
Correct.
So this technology change is coming. It's prominent. Maybe we have to choose between the vendors who are the providers of that. That is also taken one step before. And then it's also convincing the workforce, like, why we chosen this, why we chose X vendor or Y vendor. I'm skipping to take any names. And then is communicating the why and what are the basis for us to choose this technology, a particular technology stack, and how it is going to enable and our business continue smoothly, or how it's going to help us further. And within this technology universe, what are the opportunities to learn and to build a profile for yourself? Yeah, so say something like, let me say this way. In the mainframe domain, for example, the concept of DevOps, the concept of business intelligence, it never really existed. And like from a mainframe, even reading a report or so, reading a data multiple times over, just for consolidating some intelligence, is costly. Reading same data over is costly because it costs processor a certain way. Mainframes billing happens that way. But this is not even a paradigm in our non-mainframe computing, PCs and everything. It's like a basic thing to kind of first explain, like, why we are doing this. We want faster delivery. We want, instead of making one release every 2 months, we want to do like every 6 days. It's not possible that technology wise. So once this communication is kind of given out, then comes like what needs to be done. And then with the part which I was touching, like in this technology universe, what are the options available for you to grow yourself into? So coming from whichever programming language, for example, we're talking about developers, right? So we do have a concept of like people who tend to learn another programming language or technology quicker and faster. We also call them polyglot developers, right? Like who can actually switch from one technology to another smoothly and come back also. So these developers do play kind of a crucial role, and they are the early adopters. And they kind of set a reference example for others. And then again, I'm now getting to tech side a little bit, is then building a first good use case, building a first good example, technical example, building a first good reference application of that technology, that, hey, okay, let me go back to a simplest example. Like if it's a bookstore library, which was running on technology, old technology, and this is the new technology. So how it's done. So having a kind of a reference library application technically. So once that is done, then you take the adoption to like one level next. Now another team can jump into it, or that code can be shared across the organization, and others can see how a reference application can be built in this technology, and how we can also start building up ourselves. So basically, I will say this would be a journey. But again, as we were also doing Corona dynamics, and we also discovered something called social learning. So it's you learn by yourself following a online e-tutorials, by virtual classroom, but also there's an element of social learning, like having some problems to solve together as two or three online together, collaborating or kind of challenging each other and kind of building certain reference application using that technology. So those elements also kind of like trigger your learning path, your learning hunger as well. Also kind of there's the output of all those is like the organizations can actually use to showcase to rest of the workforce and to a broader workforce. So upskilling also builds better jobs. Let me say this way.
100%. Yeah. I mean, you think about it from that perspective, right? There is no, it's not a zero sum game, right? If you are upskilling and, you know, the candidate might leave the company and go elsewhere, but overall the ecosystem of developers itself is up expanding. But you brought up this interesting concept of social learning. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, let me say first thing, I'm not expert in this. I come from the tech background. Okay. Yeah, but of course the social learning theory has been existing from long time ago, and maybe there are much and many more times qualified people than me who can find out by simple Google itself. But in a nutshell, what I will say, like the basic elements that we use for social learning is like if somebody is doing like somebody is working on a new technology, sure, kind of building first application. So so having some points to observe that. Say something and somebody to pay attention. I think the framework says like there are five elements in that, which is observation, attention, retention, reproduction, and motivation. Yeah. So same goes in like, okay, I'm not going to use technology names, so I'm a bit careful with my language. So I'm using a particular technology to develop a bookstore application, and I want to tell to rest of the team or the HR ops, HR function around me wants to communicate this out. So they could point at me that, hey, Amandeep is building something on this new technology, and this could be something we should look at. So, you know, like the observation, attention element is there and all that. Now, some could start in communication with me, and it goes vice versa. Like I can get their perspectives. And then out of those, periodic snippets of sharings or like how it is going, how my code is building up, for example, using this new technology. That could be a good reference example of like others to see that, oh, this is the way this is done. This is the way you progress also, like from which state to which state, not just like an end product is shown and do it this way. And they have a motivation to kind of reproduce the way, become kind of expertise, build their own expertise. And end of it, like all the exercises that they retain this as a kind of a knowledge which they can start using. So basically the elements are to, I will say, generate attention and make sure that everybody is kind of motivated and they retain these learnings. Probably retention is the most crucial part here, because most of the trainings, as we say, trainings are delivered, you get inspired, you see this kind of things do. You may have some kind of a matching work items to employ that training or not. But if not, your attention is drained very soon. So social learning is kind of which takes care of that to some extent. But still, the organizations have to arrange suitable work.
Got it. Understood. Yeah. It's sort of, in an office space, you do learn from your peers and colleagues just by maybe even not even talking to them, just looking at how they talk in meetings and their intonation and how they are speaking and that sort of stuff. So I think there is definitely a lot of merit to it. What are some of the other ways that given you know this rise of remote, you know, fueled by the pandemic, what are some of the apart from, you know, one is of course the upskilling part of it, but one challenge I think could be, you know, learning from your peers, from your colleagues or immediate managers in a setting where you are, you know, sitting face to face along with each other. Has that sort of brought on new challenges? As in, do you see maybe junior developers not able to get to that point very, very fast? Or
it depends again on the, from organization to organization, let me say.
Sure.
But the example you put, like, I have actually seen example opposite to that also.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's like when a relatively junior developer being told, like, this is the way to do things, and like, this is an optimal way, and this person happens to be upright friend, says, like, I know how to do this, tell this to my seniors.
yeah.
So this does happen, and that also is like every organization knows that there is a certain kind of a demography of the senior, junior, senior most developers, tech staff, which is and people who are coming fresh into the workforce, like first 2-3 years, they might have studied some technologies in their academics itself, which they were not exposed to.
Correct.
And so there's a kind of a huge spectrum of those technical personas also involved. Okay. But yeah, it kind of a healthy, I will say, attention to each other's tasks and learning from each other, taking it that way. That is, of course, kind of a bonding glue in any organization's overall upskilling.
Correct. Do you think bigger organizations, like, for example, most of the bigger organizations have some sort of a technical academy, right? You yourself, you know, work for that particular function. But do you see more companies starting that, or do you see companies relying more on e-learning and, you know, augmenting it with something from outside, bringing in experts from outside, conducting sessions? Which path do you see them taking?
I'm glad that you asked this question. But the thing is that Corona happened in 2020, March, right? But before that, there was many news which happened in 2018 and 19, which I believe did not get sufficient attention. So there was some news on this automation and replacement of workers and upskilling. So that's one undercurrent.
Correct.
And second most important was ILO, International Labour Organization. During the Senatory Convention in July 2019, mm-hmm. ILO adopted in their Senatory Declaration Charter, which is called Future of Work.
Oh, wow.
It's calling for each member state to establish a lifelong learning system as a joint responsibility of governments, employers, and worker organizations. So basically, which is governments, all the private and public sector employers, worker organizations like union also. So ILO called upon that in July 19 that, hey, this is how future is going to be. Each job requires some kind of a reskilling, upskilling, and for the actual efficiency of the labor workforce, a learning function, a lifelong learning function is required. So in India, for example, when I was working, if there's a particular customer project, particular technology, you get a trainer and you get overnight training to finish up and like start doing. Yeah, but that's still the perfect way of learning any technology, because you have a need, you have a justification, and you have a clear why that this project requires this technology and this learning. But what we are talking right now is, can you anticipate that in advance and kind of start preparing your workforce? And answer to that is yes, there are technology trends which are visible to us. With Corona time, yes, companies looking to digitally transform, governments trying to contain unemployment, and of course the work councils and the unions, which are now recognizing their functions, that they are not just for protecting worker rights, they are actually for whole well-being and empowerment of workers, which also requires like unions also coming with some kind of upskilling programs and training up programs. So it's basically all these forces have to kind of somewhere combine. The only one setup which falls off from it is like small and medium organizations, because probably they cannot afford upskilling programs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there the government intervention is actually required in terms of grants or tax reductions when you do away employee training, because ultimately if these people upskill, they stay in the job, they contribute to the tax for the government, and they are off from the unemployment table. So it's a government's also to kind of step in there. I think Singapore and Luxembourg, yeah, those are petty small state examples, but still, I'm not debating their scaling part, but they did come up with something like skill councils. So these are the skills needed, and these skill councils will determine well in advance how much of workforce needed in this technology and okay, where we can start grooming them.
Correct. So
that kind of work, I think, is needs to begin like right now with the Indian 100%. Organization, like maybe CIA or whichever.
Yeah. No, 100%. Even in India, you know, the pool itself is so small that you can't even, like, one is, of course, you know, upskilling within the tech domain, as in people who are already in tech, upskilling them in new technologies or whatever. But the bigger challenge here is the pool of tech is itself is so small. And some interesting stuff, you know, Zoho has been doing it for a very long while. They take people from rural places in Tamil Nadu and they train them in technologies. And then in fact, even Freshworks, another company which is a well-known SaaS company from India, again in the state of Tamil Nadu, they have started their own academy. So essentially, anyone from Tamil Nadu who has graduated as in past high school, which is 12th standard, they are taking them in, they are paying them a stipend and training them for 6 months, and they are saying, hey, you know, if you want to come work for us, fine. But if you want to take these skills somewhere else, that's also perfectly fine. And I think that is the sort of approach which all these institutions, organizations will have to take, right? Because again, if you go with the zero-sum mindset, which says, which could be, you know, if Freshers could say, you know, I'm training you, you have to come work with me for 3 years, I have this bond. That might be counterproductive. Now what they're saying is, if I am expanding the pool itself, at some point it will come back and help our cause as well. Are you seeing similar sort of approach elsewhere as well, or in India, if you know of something?
Honestly, not up to as it should be. Probably the reason also is like the pandemic. The pandemic has pushed upskilling to a forefront in a different way.
Correct.
Basically, like affordable, accessible, and clear pathway to employment.
Correct.
You know, like, so it's like, okay, this is arranged and this is an attached employment with it. But yeah, it could be more broader, and rather it should be more broader as the examples you mentioned.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And also, like, maybe I'm taking kind of a step out again a little bit. But
no, please.
Will we also say about, I don't know, like if Indian workforce is much more in Northern and Western Europe, we have a huge gender gap in STEM subjects.
Definitely.
And India working in Bangalore, I think it was much more better. Let me say this way. Now, the thing is, skill councils also would have this responsibility that the societal elements, like, is there a certain demography, is there a certain gender, who is kind of progressing faster than other?
Correct.
So that responsibility also comes along, and I'm not advocating any reservation system, but it's something very visible to everyone that, hey, if there is a certain demography, a certain gender progressing with a certain skill, ultimately the business also requires kind of different perspectives, certain diversity. So in a way, that's a shortage of a skill for that business. So these are like the the side aspirations also should be attached with the upskilling initiative.
100%.
That 100%. Upskilling takes everyone along. It's not in favor with the one particular demography or particular gender.
Got it. No, that's an important point. People tend to skip that part of the equation. Of course, not in a workplace setting itself where it has taken prominence, right? Gender diversity, inclusion, and all of that. But in this perspective, yeah, it's important to keep that in mind. Great point that you brought up, Amandeep. Amandeep, if listeners want to learn more from you, read more from you, is there some platform they can connect with you, read? Maybe you write somewhere, where can they go and see more of your work?
Reach me on LinkedIn, Amandeep Mitha.
Okay, thank you so much, Amandeep, for coming on the Shape of Work podcast. Great conversation. I don't think we have had any conversation related to, you know, upskilling in such depth on the Shape of Work before this. I can remember vaguely talking about it in one of the episodes, but I'm pretty sure this is the only episode where we have gone in depth, and I'm pretty sure listeners will derive a lot of value from the conversation. Thank you again for coming on the Shape of Work podcast.
Thanks. My pleasure being here. Thanks for the time. Yes.